hello and welcome to this second edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. Coming to you live from the ExchangeWire studio. I use that term loosely. What that means is the ExchangeWire HQ meeting room. I'm Rachel Smith and I'm COO of ExchangeWire. I'm anchoring the session today because we've let Lindsay Roundtree go on holiday. Here in the studio with me, I've got Kieran O'Kane.
Hello.
ExchangeWire CEO. Hello, Kieran.
Hello, it's great to be here again. Thanks for having me back.
Glad you can make time for it.
I tried last week.
Your busy schedule.
Yeah, I wasn't very good last week.
Well,
I spoke too much.
Yeah, you did talk too much.
Yeah.
That's normal.
And this week it's a shorter podcast, so don't worry. 45 minutes.
Kicking off with a lot of talking, though.
Right.
And let me introduce our guest, which is Paul Gubbins from Unruly.
Hello.
Hello, Paul. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And we have a guest appearance today from Paul Snubbins. He's coming in later on into the actual podcast.
No, this is the Ad Exchanger podcast, right?
Oh, Ad Exchanger. Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
Descending already, okay. Right.
I like Paul Snubbins better anyway.
Reining this back in. Okay, so let's kick off with a couple of news items, as our listeners will hopefully be getting to grips with. This is this podcast an opportunity to have a bit of a chit-chat about things that are in the news or that have come up in the news in the industry over the last week, and then we'll move on to fire a couple of questions specifically at Paul about what he's up to at Unruly. So kicking it off, I want to talk with the first item I want to talk about this week is that obviously the whole industry will be aware of Brian O'Kelly's departure from AppNexus, which was announced late last week. AdExchanger broke that story and published the letter that Brian Lesser sent to all of his employees at Xandr outlining what that new structure is going to look like. So Brian O'Kelly's departure probably won't be that much of a surprise to people, but I'm just really interested to know what the two of you think about what he's likely to move on to next. He's obviously a big industry figure, someone that, you know, I think back to the early
days. Very big.
Yeah, tall too. Think back to the early days of ExchangeWire events and, you know, Brian was on stage, I think, at what, the second ATS London? And so, you know, here we are a long way away from that. And I'm just interested to know what you two think he's going to be moving on to next.
Well, assuming he stays in the kind of mad tech sector, I don't think there's any shortage of issues that he could try and tackle, right?
Yeah.
He's certainly got the domain knowledge. He's got the product knowledge. He's got the ear of the street. He's extremely well respected. So I'm super excited to figure out what he's going to go and do next.
Brian O'Kelly is probably the greatest mind of our ad tech industry, bar us, obviously.
I'm glad you said Boris and not you.
Well, not me. I'm just a bullshitter. These are doers. I think that Brian O'Kelly didn't want to sell AppNexus.
What makes you say that, though, Kieran? How are you so confident about this?
Because Brian O'Kelly's a man who wanted to take on Google and Facebook, particularly Google. He felt he had a product and a company that could have taken Google on, and I don't know. I just get the sense that he didn't want to sell to AT&T, and that would make me think that he will take some time off and come back with some next gen sort of project. Whether that's
and what do you think that is? An ad server? Do you think there is a need for a true challenger to some of the existing vendors?
So like Google just has the run of the run of the country, like, you know, like nobody can touch them in the ad server space. It's really hard to keep an ad.
Yeah, but that's because it's a good product, right? Publishers aren't going to use something that doesn't work for them. Buyers aren't going to use something that doesn't work for them.
That's
it's a question of is there a scalable alternative
that's not
for
true.
To use?
That's not true. Google's got a good product, but it's not a great product. It could be a lot better than it is. They don't have to try because nobody can challenge them, right?
Google supports
their business by their massive ad network and their massive demand and supply business, right? They effectively allow this. They're giving away for free.
Yeah, but Kieran, why then, for the last 6 or 7 years, have VCs been funding DSPs hand over fist? Why haven't more people gone out and built ad servers? If you're telling me there's a need for a viable alternative,
yeah,
why don't we see more investment?
Because
why don't we see more smart engineers building ad servers?
Because it's hard.
I was going
to
say,
it's really hard to support, right? I mean, look at OpenX had an ad server. I think they still do. But they ditched it in favor of their SSP business because it was more marginal and it was less of an engineering I'm not saying that SSPs are less complicated, but I'm saying it was much more easier to run an SSP than an ad server business.
Mm. Well, I think, look, if you look at the evolution of the way publishers are monetizing their inventory, if we look at the evolution of header bidding and unified auction, I think if there is ever going to be a point in time when somebody comes along and builds a next generation ad server that can look at all sources of demand and manage that holistically in real time.
You can't do that in DFP at the minute.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about what you can and can't do in existing stack. I'm talking about whether or not the time is right now to get investment and to build a new equivalent of something that's worked extremely well for the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and Brian O'Kelly could be that person.
Right? I think he'll wait until the right opportunity. So if we look at trends in the market, right, companies that have first-party data are winning hands down, right? So Amazon, Facebook, Google, anybody who's got logged in data, any first-party data. So I think he'll wait until there's an opportunity. There's a lot to get excited about blockchain, for instance, right? So blockchain at the minute is being applied in the wrong ways. But the promise of blockchain around decentralizing the web is really exciting. So maybe, I think he'll wait. He's got enough money to sit on. But he'll be back. Brian O'Kelly's a man who I don't think he's in it for the money. Per se, I think he's kind of a man who's spoiling for a fight and to prove a point.
Which makes him the most interesting person in ad tech.
He's a big advocate
of this notion of independent ad tech, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's what was interesting about the acquisition is that we were all, particularly here in Europe, thinking, okay, what happens next? Because we know AppNexus have really been the kind of brand behind the notion of independent ad tech. So is this Brian's opportunity to kind of come out all guns blazing, building something new and different.
Yeah, but again, right, hopefully, you know, we're not going to just see the reinvention of existing technology.
No.
We spend it's very little time new. Talking about the Internet of Things, out of home. There is a whole plethora of different opportunities that are ripe for disruption at the moment. And I just don't think any of those areas are being tackled by anybody that has deep domain expertise. Well, certainly from what I've read recently, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things like unique IDs and all, bigger areas to focus on, so he'll come back with something. But you know, at the end of the day, the ad server is still a vital part of media monetization on the internet. Like,
but do you think it's just quite a boring product? Is that why more people don't build? What are you doing? I'm in my incubator building an ad server. It's not that sexy, is it?
It's not sexy, but it's
but it's
really important.
No, I agree.
But the best companies in the world are really boring companies, you know, in many ways.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right.
Nothing wrong with being boring.
I am very boring today.
Okay, so we wait with bated breath to see what Brian's going to do next. Okay.
We should have a Brian O'Kelly countdown clock.
Oh, well, we should definitely, run a bit of a wager. What's
the bot clock?
It's not going to be a mobile wager. ESP, is it?
Okay, so moving on to the second story that I wanted to discuss with you guys, which is came out in the media, I think, today or yesterday here in the UK.
Today,
right, thank you. Johnston Press, the publisher, has put themselves up for sale. And they're stating that part of the challenges that they were facing is a decline in traditional and also digital advertising sales, and that they've got something in the region of £220 million worth of debt that needs to be repaid by sort of June or July next year.
Yep.
So they're obviously in a really, really, really challenging position, and now they're looking for a buyer. So I guess what I want to know from you guys is some general thoughts on that, because it's big news. You know, they're a really important sort of local and regional publisher here in the UK, and they've got some really important, well-known titles. And what can ad tech do to help? What's your, you know, perception of what ad tech can do to provide some potential solutions here?
Well, I think historically, right, there's always been that debate as to whether or not ad technology has disintermediated publishers from their audiences. I think there's been a little bit of truth in that, right? If you look at what's played out in regards to finding audiences on the long tail and publishers not being able to really monetize their users in a meaningful way. I think post the evolution of GDPR and consent management platforms, it's really empowered premium publishers again. So if you look at Johnston, I mean, press isn't dead. Quality journalism is far from dead. They've still got some fantastic titles in that stable. I think the iNewspaper is still profitable. So it's not doom and gloom as many of the trade would have us to believe. But to answer your question, I think leveraged and harnessed in the right way, certainly ad tech and martech can really empower publishers to take tighter controls of their audiences. And again, it's not just GDPR this side of the pond. It'll be the California Consumer Privacy Act in the US as well. I think smart publishers are in the best position they've ever been in.
Yeah, so I don't think this is a question of ad tech. I think it's a question of the legacy model they're all still carrying around. Like, print is dying a slow death, and they're carrying quite a lot of costs. So whether it's, you know, I don't know much about Johnson Press financial situation, but like 220 million in debt, to service that debt is quite a lot, particularly when their advertising business is really dying. But I suppose that there's like, journalism is journalism, and Johnson Press is a particularly important newspaper group because they have so many local newspapers.
They've got like the Scotsman, I think.
They've got some real pillars
of publishing. But, and again, it's not that press is dead, Kieran.
No, I never said that.
No, but it's the
print.
I think it's the consumption habits are changing.
Yeah, it's true, but I don't think that, you know, in an age when we have a very confused political environment right now, the local newspapers are a good way to keep manners on politicians, local politicians.
I completely agree. Mm.
And they're really essential. And it's kind of sad to see this happening. But I don't know what's going to happen to Johnson Press. Maybe they get bought by a bigger company. But then is it just inheriting another issue? Do they have to sit down and think about what is our model? Like, do we have to maybe close some title or print down? But then again, that's kind of like, you're kind of flushing your money away then, because they're actually making money, but not enough to sustain the rest of the business. So I think it's more, I genuinely think that ad tech can empower, especially these amazing publications around first party data. But it's not, we can only help them so far. It's the actual legacy business they're dragging around, which is a problem.
And I think Washington Post and those guys in the US are a prime example of a fantastic publisher and a premium news publisher that's obviously super important when it comes to the political landscape and the wider news landscape, but have been super smart when it comes to the application and deployment of either proprietary tech or third-party tech that they've
licensed. Washington Post got bought by an e-commerce sugar daddy. You know what I mean?
But don't they have a
The New York Times is a great example
of how smart strategies by publishers
can leverage technology. Because don't they have a subscription service alongside their ad-supported service? And it just means that they've got diversified monetization, models. And maybe that's exactly what you're referring to, Kieran, is that, you know, they need to really look at their strategic approach here. Because like you say, Paul, it's not that Johnson Press is going to go under. It's that they're looking for a buyer because they realise that now's the time to act. Things are getting a little bit chaotic and they're at crisis point.
Correct.
So it means big changes from here.
But if the owners can't turn that business around, who else can? I mean, what happens if a private equity company comes in and buys them, just loads more debt on them, which is what private equity companies generally do, leverages them up to the hilt because they're borrowing the money on the balance sheet and putting it on the balance sheet. And it's, you know,
listed company, right? So you wouldn't think that anyone's going to come in and buy them under any set of circumstances without some serious strategic plan in place for turning that business around. And they've already declared, you know, that it's their traditional and digital advertising model is declining. So someone's going to do
something. Well, the digital revenue that's a worry. If that is actually declining, then that's a real worry. And I suppose there's a bigger picture. When you say ad tech is disintermediated, you're probably referring to Google and Facebook, who have literally just eaten up their local ad revenue.
Yes and no, but I mean, as you both know me pretty well, I'm a massive advocate of ad tech and programmatic and how it empowers those on both the buy and sell side, but there's no getting away from it. Premium publishers have been disintermediated, certainly before GDPR, due to the ability of those on the buyer side to find audiences at scale in the longer tail. Before the advent of programmatic, you had to call a publisher's direct sales team. You paid for quality journalism. You paid for quality context. And that's how publishers made their money, empowered their news floors. And that's why they were thriving businesses. So again, I think ad tech has been a little bit guilty of disintermediation of quality news brands. But with things like GDPR and controls that now publishers have in place, it's put them back in the driving seat. And that's why I think all of these privacy initiatives are fantastic for journalism. Because it empowers them. It no longer disintermediates them.
I was just thinking about how... I don't know enough about Johnson Press's business. But it feels to me that they should probably enforce something like a kind of a login into their publication. That would be a really good start. And then you've got a unique ID then to target against, and their yields will go up. I think that's potentially that's a good start, because then that's not a paywall. That's kind of like a data paywall, if you agree.
And that's a challenge that lots of publishers have always had. They haven't really had the ability to harness or extract first-party data at scale. And, you know, that is that dichotomy of do you put up a paywall, don't you put up a paywall?
I wouldn't put a paywall for local news. But if you have, like, to be honest, if people still want local news, and why not get them to log in, at least get that data, build a DMP in the back end, and then basically sell it in a programmatic way.
Mm-hmm.
And the agency would buy, and Google and Facebook would buy that all day if you have a unique ID, like, you know. Because at the minute, it's just a blind contextual buy in many ways.
I agree, Kieran. But at a time when big news publishers are desperate to make sure there's no disintermediation again of their audiences or blockers, just somebody consuming their content, you have to look at the data maybe that they have in hand that illustrates to them that asking somebody to log in is a step too far when you've got somebody that's looking for snackable content, they're on the move. There are pros and cons of these particular strategies.
Well, I agree with that. I would say that local news is still an essential part of people. If you live in a local area, you want to know what's going on, right? Schools, or local sports teams, local events. It's really important to know what's going on in the community.
I agree.
Well, it's clearly they need a tiered strategy, right? They need to be tackling, you know, a number of different things. It's not going to be...
We could have a whole conference on Johnson Press's strategy, but...
But Karen, I don't think it's not an issue that's isolated to those guys, right?
It's a bigger problem.
It's a challenge that many publishers are facing at the moment. And again, I think you've hit the nail on the head. They need the ability to understand more about their audiences and to go kind of full circle. That's where ad tech enables them to do that. But it's about smart deployment and smart strategies that side.
Yeah, yeah.
Well right. said. Paul Snubbins would have a clue with that stuff, whoever that guy is. It's not me, by the way.
Moving right along. Let's move on to the final news story for this session, which is focusing on streaming services. So there was a bit of news that came out this week about some US media companies launching new streaming services. So that's New TV launching a new short form content streaming service, which is aimed at the 25 to 35 year old market. Then there's Warner Media launching a streaming service focusing on HBO content and other AT&T owned films and TV. And then Apple launching new Apple TV digital video service, which is also going to be housing original content. And we were chatting about this earlier on this morning in the office here at Exchange, where I was saying that this just feels like it's creating an environment where there's an oversupply of streaming services in the market. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, how many subscriptions can one individual, one household, one family sustain? Are people getting tapped out? Do they feel like they've got to make some choices between streaming services and subscriptions? So I want to know what you guys think about that and whether you think any or all of this is a sort of a push to developing ad-funded models from within these media companies.
I personally think we're going to see more. If you look at
more streaming services,
correct? Yeah. Mm. Well, more DTC plays. Right. If you look at the decline in potential paid for television and people thinking about their strategies as to whether or not they license content to third parties, i.e. somebody that can distribute it for them, or whether or not they feel that that is disintermediation to them, and then they want to go and activate their own DTC strategy, will that then increase more streaming services? What I mean there is people like Disney, for instance. Are they going to take control of all their content and just go direct to the end consumer themselves? Are they going to slowly shut down some of their licensing agreements? I don't know. But dependent on what panel you listen to or what you read in the trade press, it sounds like they're some of the strategies that are currently playing out. And if everybody takes the same approach, that is in itself going to create more fragmentation. Mm. And the end user is going to have to log into more apps to actually consume that content.
This is an interesting one because I think there's a couple of firms that could do it. Disney's a good example. AT&T is probably another example. Anybody with a video library of content, and Netflix is obviously on deals with everybody, and it's got its own content studio, but it's not for everybody. I mean, I've currently got 4 or 5 subscription models going on. Not my own, obviously.
Well,
funny enough, I've got Gaelic football, which I pay 100 quid.
Not a surprise.
I've got Now TV, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and I subscribe to the Major League Baseball as well.
But
it's only like $90. I don't ask you why, I just love baseball.
Are they all active subscriptions, or are some of them, like, you know, bundled into smart TV?
No. Okay. They are separate subscriptions.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. I think that there will be some, at some stage, some fatigue around this, right? People just don't have endless amounts of money.
There'll be households that don't have the money to support. But
it'd be interesting to see what the sports guys do. So, like, in the US, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, they all have their own specific streaming service, right? It would be interesting to see what happens next couple of years around the Premiership, right? Or individual football clubs. And think, well, I could actually have a whole DTC, like what my, how many Man United fans are there globally? You know, tens of millions. And imagine if they signed up for, like, that's revenue into the pockets of. I'm not sure how Major League Baseball, MLB.com does its rights to the local TVs.
Rights,
I think they've got their own streaming service, but they have local terrestrial TV deals. But it will be interesting. I think we are going to hit a threshold in terms of how much more money people can pay for stuff. Because, like, you know, it's not people's... people's amount of money they have to spend is finite,
it's not
right?
Infinite, yeah.
It's finite.
So, but then, do you think then we see that kind of cap out? You've got maybe a Comcast, you've got a Netflix, you've got a Disney. Do you think collectively between those vendors, they will own 90% of the kind
content.
Of... content. Yeah, the content and rights. Otherwise, to your point, the average consumer or the average millennial isn't going to have 15 different apps that they pay for on a regular basis.
So there, I mean, those is it... I don't know, skinny bundles, and I suppose they give out a carrier charge for whatever's on the whatever's on. I don't even know. That economic model is interesting. I don't know if you're the one streaming channel that rules them all, right? Are you sharing some of the subscriptions with the channels that you carry onto the thing?
Good question.
Depends on probably who owns the content as well, right? So who's producing the content and paying for the content, and how is all of that? How is all of that? You know, being fanned out. And I think the other thing is you'll start to see perhaps more targeted solutions, right? So, you know, that new TV sort of service is quite interesting because they're specifically targeting an age group. So the more that you start to get some potential data from what, you know, people that are subscribing to your service are watching, then the more there is the possibility for, I think, you know, smaller, more defined services to be popping up and for people to, you know, want to just look at snippets of content.
So are you potentially advocating, if we're saying that people are going to be stretched in regards to their budgets and the amount of apps that they can afford, are you saying there's a potential there for a data value prop, whereas the end user gives up potential rights to data in order for free content?
It's ad funded.
Correct, therefore, right, if you're a millennial these days, and even myself, if somebody said you can have Netflix for free or Amazon for free...
But
they need to know what you're browsing via your IP, they need to know what you're watching, etc. That's a value prop that I can... It's quite tangible to me.
I'm sure lots of people would be prepared to undertake that.
This is where the advertising piece comes in, right? So there's a company in... in the US, I can't remember the name, they're like a weird name, video streaming service, right? And Netflix had done a load of deals with all the Hollywood studios, but then they started fucking off everybody because they started making their own films, which competed with the studios. And this company went along and just said, look, I will give you 90% of all the ad revenue off the back of this. And I think there's a play to aggregate, like, and it's like a DTC player. There could be thousands of OTT streaming services, right? You could be into fishing, or you could be into fucking dogs or whatever. Not dogging, obviously, or something else. Google Video Feast.
I do not know how we got there.
I'm not involved.
No.
I'm leaving.
I'm accepting no responsibility for that line.
Can we get back to head a bit?
Could we stop talking about it? But I'm saying there could be thousands of these channels, right? And it's almost like it could be an interesting play, right? Because let's just say that if you take the DTC model, right, you build an audience on Facebook, Google, programmatic, right? It's your audience around that specific niche. And then you aggregate content and bring it in and basically trade data access to content and run ads into it.
Yeah.
I think that's where ad tech has a real role to play in this.
I agree. I mean, again, I'm by far a TV expert, but I, you know, 3 to 4 years' time, I think everything's free. It's all DTC. And the value prop there is your data that you give up for targeted ads, and all of the content that you want is there on any device that you decide to consume in within your connected home.
No subscriptions.
No.
No, no, there will be.
Interesting.
No, there will be.
It's a bold prediction, but
yeah, no, why, yeah, why would you?
Heard it here first. No, there will be subscription models. Hey, there will be.
But I think, Kieran, they're going to be massively eroded, and you're only going to have to really subscribe to if you really want to see that boxing match, or you really want to see, you know, Oasis Reform again. You know, I'd pay whatever it may be for that particular gig. But the point I'm saying is general studio stuff. It's millennials are going to expect it for free. And they don't care about targeted advertising because that's the world they're growing up in. And they can see the value prop of watching a 30-second ad or a 15-second ad or a 6-second ad. So long as it's tailored and targeted, I think people are going to be prepared to watch that to get their next episode of Silicon Valley for free.
Yeah, I agree with that to a point. But there will be services. There'll be the way Amazon's using Prime is quite interesting.
Right. But they're going down that route, Apple
as well. I reckon Apple will come up with a product that basically locks in their slave, enslaved user base, because that's what they are. Any Apple users out there, you're all slaves. Tim.
I just was waiting for you to descend into the Apple rant.
Oh,
actually.
I hate Apple.
I knew that was coming.
Another company I hate. There's a second one I hate. Anyway, but I think your laptops are great, by the way. but yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think there'll be a few subscribers. The Disney stuff, anybody with real strong brands will have it, but the majority of OTT or streaming services will probably be free. And I think your idea, you're right about the ad supported stuff, because it's good because that then distributes the power away from the big sort of players, because then you have a really unique audience and you can sell that on a programmatic
basis.
You've
got to remember as well, I know we're talking about different generations and different demographics, but people have fundamentally grown up with advertising around television.
Yeah.
It's an environment where people expect ads. I mean, look at the Super Bowl, for instance.
Yeah.
One of the biggest televised events in the world, and advertising is almost as important as the actual event.
It's certainly an event within itself, right? It's the event within the
people,
event.
It's not deemed disruptive in the same way that other forms of advertising is deemed disruptive. Yeah. People expect it within those types of environments. So, I mean, again, my prediction may be way off, but I think 3 to 4 years' time, majority of OTT content is free of charge.
You heard it here first.
It's giving me a lot of interesting models, I think. I think if you're an ad network now, right, and your IO business is dying its arse, I would be looking at potentially getting a niche, right, and aggregating audience, and then basically doing content deals with content producers and building your own OTT play.
I think that's
Ari Paparo said once, 1,000 ad networks will bloom. You could have 100,000 ad networks will bloom, like, you know.
Okay, what about a credit system in the home of tomorrow? So the more data I share, the more hours of you and I've built up, and then I can watch a certain amount of shows based upon the information that I've given via my IP address to a particular company. That then is used to serve back to you targeted ads. So that's like an electricity meter. I know that I've got 4 hours left in my Freeview at the moment because there's 4 hours of data on me.
What happens if you run out of data to share?
Correct. You have to go and generate some more page impressions.
It's like a Bangladeshi bot farm.
That sounds like a fascinating world. Right. We're going to move on from this segment because we're running out of time.
Are we?
Yeah.
We can talk for hours.
25 minutes.
We're okay.
25 minutes. We've got left. 10.
Here we go. You didn't see.
I can't believe there's no beers in here. This is an added.
How hot and steamy is it in the Exchange Wire podcast studio? It's very warm in
this
here.
This is a custom made studio. you know, we put.
Made to put people under pressure, literally, in the hot seat. Yes, we're running out of time. In that, I want to move on to the next segment, which is. A bit of a Q&A between Kieran and Paul. Talk a little bit about, Paul, what you're up to at Unruly, and get your perspective on a couple of industry things.
Cool.
How many fire away, Kieran.
How many fake Twitter accounts do you have?
Not enough.
100. I believe that's a gauge for how popular man is.
I just was about to say, personally, Paul, I would be very flattered if I were you.
I am flattered.
What do they say? That
imitation.
Thank you is the highest form of flattery.
Yeah. And anonymous accounts are assholes anyway because they're all hiding behind them. So, Paul, in terms of where you're working right now,
Really
interesting company. Independent, but now was independent and now is owned by News Corp. Is that right? Is it News Corp or News Corp?
No, that's right. It's owned by News UK.
Who
are owned by News Corp.
Right, and how does that work then in terms of, we were talking about Johnson Prentice previously, how does that work? Do they work in tandem? Is that a good sort of fit then for for, you know, that company to bought Unruly?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a fantastic time to be Unruly. They've been through several iterations, and we're still a very, very large video ad tech company.
Yeah.
So we still have a large managed media part of the business,
right,
where we go out and service all of the opcos. We're partners with all of the major agency groups.
Yeah.
We've got a large direct sales team that go out, understand the needs of our advertisers. And, you know, we manage the deals, we optimize the deals, we leverage our data sets to deliver campaigns.
Yeah.
But the growing part of our business is really our exchange business, Unruly X. So it's a very large video ad exchange, working with some of the largest advertisers in the world to provide that scaled, brand safe, real element to the video inventory landscape that we constantly hear is under threat from fraudsters and bad practices.
What are you selling? Are you selling Outstream, InStream?
Correct. So Outstream was at the core of our strategy, but increasingly we're being asked to service other ad formats as well. And that's what we're doing at the moment. So it's not just Outstream, it's also InStream also.
Okay. And in terms of sort of the company itself, because we've had this conversation before about differentiation in ad tech, right?
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of articles written about the recent sort of index debacle,
yeah,
and what they've been accused of. And then there's been a sort of a fuller conversation around the wrapper and all the rest of it. It just feels to me, and you've publicly said that some ad tech companies don't have any unique supply, don't have any unique data.
Yeah.
And the tech is very much commoditized,
yep,
and even unique demand. So in terms of sort of how, you know, this is not a question about Unruly, but in terms of how an ad tech company now stays relevant, what,
yep,
do they need to do that? Is it all about managed service now from all these guys? Or,
I don't think it's any secret that managed service execution is still a very large part of the UK digital ecosystem. Not every single agency group has yet transitioned to be 100% programmatic. Programmatic execution isn't right for every single publisher, for every single advertiser, for every single KPI.
Yeah.
So Unruly as a business, we still execute campaigns via insertion orders because that's what our agency partners are asking us to do. They want access to our service layer. They want access to our optimization. They want access to our campaign reporting. But increasingly, the growing part of our business is our exchange. And more agencies are asking to access the unique supply that we have. That unique supply may come from News UK, who owns us, or it may come from publishers that sits within our verified marketplace that we created. That's a collection of some of the largest news publishers in the world, people like The Guardian, The Telegraph, the News UK properties. And they access that in a kind of open exchange way, a PMP environment. But increasingly, we're seeing people ask to execute on a programmatic guaranteed basis.
I was about to ask about that.
Yeah, and we kind of see that as the real convergence of hand-sold programmatic, which is managed.
Which is just based for listeners out there. That's just the IO business.
Yeah. So effectively, right, my school of thought here is, and kind of Unruly school of thought is, PMPs haven't really given agencies the environment to transition all of their budgets into programmatic in a controlled way.
But it's been very difficult and cumbersome and
correct.
It's an absolute pain in the arse to set up for.
Correct. But if you look at the IO, always gave stability when it came to fixed pricing, fixed volumes. Mm. Agencies knew what they were getting. They tried to transition into PMP environments, and sometimes they're very volatile. Publishers never send the inventory there because they may have got a better deal via their direct sales teams, and the agencies never committed demand to it because they may have found the inventory elsewhere on another SSP. So those environments were never as good or as strong in some instances as the IO when it came to giving them assurances that they'd deliver out their budgets in full. Fast forward to where we are today, and programmatic guaranteed really enables those on the buy side and the sell side to get reassurances that A, the agency are going to spend what they said they're going to spend,
yeah,
into the deal, and the publisher is going to send the volumes of impressions that they said they would send.
So are they committing to spend against a specific targeted audience? So if they said to publisher A, so we're going,
yep,
to spend £1 million in the next quarter,
yep,
if we see this audience.
Yeah, there's several different flavors, and programmatic guaranteed as a biomechanic is still very much in its evolution stages.
Because I think Google are pushing this very aggressively.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, again, we know all of the big holding codes have come out publicly to say they want to transition to be 100% programmatic. Brands want to be executed that way when they're deploying their budgets because they know there's much more control for them. But again, going back to the volatility of PMPs, that's why everyone now is talking about programmatic guarantee. But to answer your question, Kieran, the different types of flavors and the different buy mechanics, some may say we'll only buy if we see an audience. Others may say we'll only buy if you can guarantee the pricing. Others may say we'll only buy if you can guarantee the volumes. It's very much dependent on what the KPIs are of the advertiser, the agency, and the SSP that you're buying through. But for us at Unruly at the moment, it's very much around fixed pricing, fixed volumes, addressing some of the volatility that historical PMPs have kind of had to make sure that those environments are better placed to capture big brand spends for the publishers that we work with globally.
So how do you do, is the programmatic guarantee executed through the DSP then?
Correct, yeah.
And is that happening with you, with Unruly X?
Correct, yes. Okay. Yeah.
And what shape, are you seeing big volumes? Are you seeing big sort of, so you had traditionally a massive IO business. Are you seeing that now being transferred across?
Yes, we see that. So programmatic guaranteed for us is still an early mechanic,
right,
that we've launched recently. We actually released a PR, I think, last week when we referenced our U7 project. Not too sure. You guys familiar with that? Do you see that?
No. This is your round table.
Correct, yeah, the client council. Yeah. So effectively, we've got some of the largest advertisers in the world, and we're working with them to build out a set of global frameworks to tackle some of the opacity and some of the practices that currently exist in ad tech.
Right.
And programmatic guaranteed, we feel, will help transition some of the managed bookings that we take to be executed through the exchanges. Because we're being asked time and time again from those brands that we work with and from the agencies to provide them the environments where they can spend big branding budgets and at a fixed price and at the way they want to deliver a fixed amount of impressions. And again, standard PMPs have just been too volatile for them to do that. So we certainly believe that PG will be the catalyst that enables us to capture more brand spend, but via the exchange rather than insertion orders.
So do you, in terms of the mechanics then, I mean, Google are pushing it their side. Is that from a DFP perspective or?
Yeah,
so
basically the way that Google would do it, they've got DBM or whatever it's called these days. They set up a deal.
DBM,
with,
is it? Yeah. Google Ad Manager.
Correct, yeah. So they effectively do the deal with whoever's licensing DBM, the advertiser or the agency trading desk. If the publisher is on DFP, then it's quite easy for them to fix volumes, fix pricing because the publisher's using the ad server.
Mm.
So yeah, we're seeing the majority of DSPs now rolling out their programmatic guaranteed betas for the partners that license them. And again, we think going into next year, we're going to see a big uptick in brands and agencies asking to execute in that way, because there's a lot of uncertainty around the open exchange at the moment, because there's pressure on third-party data sets. PMPs, again, I keep going back to this, but historically have been quite volatile. So we think PG is going to be that real sweet spot that lets brands spend big, and it lets agencies spend with confidence, and it lets publishers forecast better because they know exactly what's coming in from the buy side.
Right.
And it also enables publishers to run that true unified auction. You can figure out whether or not you're going to capture it from your direct sales team or from a programmatic demand source.
And do you think that's going to be the standard way to buy in the market? Because it's quite interesting. Like if you're flipping an old IO based model into this new sort of data driven model.
Yeah, and that's fundamentally what it is, Kieran. It's not, people think about it as a new USP. It's not necessarily a new USP. It's another delivery mechanism.
Right.
So programmatic guaranteed is a buy mechanism like a standard biddable PMP is, or a open marketplace buying strategy. It's not changing anything. It's bringing more stability to what is sometimes a volatile buying environment.
That's interesting. So would that mean that the plan goes away effectively because the skill set around buying on an open basis or a PMP basis is like you've got traders who basically are optimizing towards the KPI, right?
Yep.
Now, if you flip the IO business into that and you have your target base, I'm going to hit these type of users and the Guardian, the need for having like a third party do that for you, like, you know?
No, for me, nothing changes. It's exactly the same. It's if you've got an agency and they're under immense pressure to transition to programmatic execution, programmatic guaranteed enables them to do that. They still have to plan the right publishers for their audiences.
Right. So this is more of a brand play than DR, is it?
Correct, at the moment, yeah. Because DR, there is still a huge element of prospecting, right?
Yeah.
You don't know what environment is going to work for you until you've found that environment. Programmatic guaranteed is about, right, I know which publishers resonate with my advertisers' KPIs. I've done all my due diligence around audience makeup. The smart people in my agency have done the planning for me. I've now identified my plan, and you go out and broker those deals with the publishers directly if you want to. That's what we're seeing play out. And then the SSPs and the DSPs are just that facilitation layer. So again, it's not something new. It's not going to disrupt anything. It's just bringing more stability, and it's just another biomechanic. It doesn't replace open marketplaces, doesn't replace PMPs. It's just another evolution of programmatic, and hopefully it brings a little bit more stability and it opens the floodgates.
And control.
Correct. For us as a collective industry to start capturing some of those larger brand spends that have historically been traded via the IO because brands haven't had the confidence that they could deliver it out in full in programmatic. And a prime example of that is tactical spend. Valentine's Day, for instance. Big budgets have to spend very quickly, and sometimes they try and deploy that within a PMP,
and it doesn't work.
Yeah. The scale's not there. There are teething issues. There are technical issues. Programmatic guarantee will give them the confidence that they can spend quickly, it's set up, and it's being spent in the right environment so they deem appropriate.
So they have their own tight white list of
100%.
And they'll do the deals directly with the publishers. Correct. And it's executed through the mechanics.
Correct.
Of ad tech.
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes ad tech can do the brokering for them, but it depends again what the appetite is from those on the buy side.
So it's just a workflow fix as well as just a data targeting
100%. Piece.
So in terms of where you see the ecosystem going, like, because you're quite vocal about this, where do you see the sort of the companies who've been dominant over the last 10 years going, like, you know? So we've just seen AppNexus get acquired by I keep calling them Xander. Xander's actually just the name that came out of them. AT&C, you know, you've got all the major video SSPs like SpotX, owned by RTL, Comcast, owned Freewheel.
Yep.
Do you see, and yourselves owned by News UK, do you see a sort of role for independent players in this space still, or is the case that it's almost like ad tech is better sort of bolted into a data media play?
I think it's going to become increasingly difficult for any vendor that doesn't have access to owned and operated inventory or access to first-party data. I think there'll always be a place for independence, and I think we're seeing that play out today with the Trade Desk. Fantastic business. You know, obviously they're now public, but the point I'm trying to articulate there is that they're not owned by one of the big motherships, and they're doing a fantastic job. But when we go back to the independent SSPs and DSPs that are still in play, what the future holds for those guys is, I don't know, in reality. I think they're going to face increasing headwinds. Many have very similar business models. Many are under immense pressures when it comes to take rates. So the sustainability of what they do today, I don't know how much longer that can go on for. They've all built fantastic businesses. They all add a lot of value. And I think, in all honesty, many will be acquired within the next 24 months. There are too many publishers out there. There are too many broadcasters. There are too many telcos that are looking for assets. And many of the SSPs and DSPs that remain in play today, I think, could help transform some of those businesses overnight. And the entry point to owning those assets at the moment is pretty low, right? I mean, you can buy leading SSPs these days for, what, 220 odd million, which isn't a lot when it comes to ad tech.
Mm. Interesting. And you think there's a few of those? I mean, obviously Terry Kawaji does his charts and thinks there's big deals happening all the time, but
I'm a big TK fan.
Oh, you love TK.
I do. If you're listening, I want to sign
pictures. We'll get him on the podcast.
He's definitely going to be a future podcast.
Yeah, he will definitely. But do you think that, because there is some interesting companies still left on the ecosystem, and you think about Index and OpenX and Rubicon and Podmatic, and then you've got, you know, on the video side, you've got Telaria. Yeah. You know, you think that Telaria will end up somewhere itself?
Well, look at Netflix. What are they? Are they in the market to buy a DSP? There's been rumors. I mean, there are a multitude of different strategics out there that have an appetite to get into ad tech. They need to sustain their revenue models. Yeah. They need to look at diversification.
Yeah.
They need to look at different markets, and ad tech can enable them to do that.
And if, as we just said before, ad-supported content is going nowhere. I mean, let's be honest here, it's the currency that pays for ads on the internet. So
pays for content.
Yeah, and again, you'll pay, some of them pay some subscriptions for some stuff, but ads will be the way it monetizes. So ad tech still has a huge part to play in that.
Yep, no, I completely agree. And that's why I think, as I said, to sustain those businesses will become increasingly difficult. But I think within 24 months, most, if not all of those guys would have been acquired. And that's without talking about private equity. I think they'll go to strategics rather than being rolled into purchases.
I think the PE guys, well, they had some success with Marketo, but yeah.
Anyway, we've run out of time. We're finished. We've run out of time.
Big 25
predictions.
Minutes.
Big predictions.
What predictions? He made no predictions.
Summary of predictions.
I haven't asked you yet about TV. Are you still watching linear TV? Every time I talk to you here and you tell me TV's dead, but every time I speak to somebody, they tell me it isn't.
No, listen. That don't get me started on that. Linear TV is dead. It's on his arse.
I'm not sure the millennials in the office would agree.
That is a lot. Listen, the millennials in the office are not watching ITV. You're not going home to switch on ITV or Channel 4.
They're watching Love Island. They were watching Love Island.
Catch up.
They're watching all sorts of stuff. They're watching all sorts of stuff in a linear fashion.
Have you guys been paid by Barb? I've been chased.
Of course you do.
I watch EastEnders.
I'm getting chased around by Barb. You're part of the Barb cabal, aren't you? You two here are under the Barb payment structure.
Kieran, time. I'm calling it. Right, Kieran, Paul, thank you very much for joining us for this session of the Mad Tech Podcast. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you all next week.
Thanks for having me, and I'll see you next week.
Still can't believe there's no beers.